Greetings. Welcome
Love
to
Talk Radio.
Greetings.
Brothers and sisters.
Sister Awareness. With Elena.
Brothers and sisters.
Sister,
I don't know what this world is coming to.
Okay.
Come on.
Okay. Go ahead and talk.
Government and politics and stunt guys,
agents,
food and drug administrators,
slave
unrighteous religious perpetrators.
Cause
see Elena will expose the treachery and lies that were told. To keep your third and your two eyes closed, you about to put it on front and this is how it unfolds.
You are now in the presence, the midst of the essence of absolute and true awareness. Yeah, Sister Awareness with Elena, engaging you in truths of our history, spirituality, economics, law, civics. You're in the right place.
Sister Awareness. Sister, you've been on my mind. Oh, sister, have I got news for you? I'm something. I hope you think that you're something too.
Greetings. Welcome. I am your host, Elena, from Georgia, and I will be coming live with a lot of information that will be very informative to the community. I will have a guest host, Steve Coakley, on the show. And I also have a caller, and I will get the caller on in a minute as well. This is my first show, so please bear with me. Caller, 404-944-2072.
Well, good evening, Sister Awareness.
Greetings. I am so happy to hear from you today.
Well, I am glad that you're on air. So tell us a little bit about Sister Awareness. What is this show
going to
be about overall?
Overall, the show is going to be about politics. It's going to be about culture. It's going to be about law. Oh, we're going to do a host of things. We're going to just do a lot of investigation and analysis of a lot of things in the community that we don't understand, a lot of people don't understand. So I'm excited about the show.
You should be. And what made you come up with the show title? And what was the drive behind actually starting this station?
Well, I'm a law student, and we have a lot of problems in our community, especially with juvenile delinquency, mass incarceration, poverty. And through my studies, I've noticed that a lot of issues that we come across, it really is because of bad leadership. We maldistribute a lot of resources that's in our community. It's a lot of things that really contribute to delinquency and crime in our community. And I think if we solve some of those issues, we could save a lot of people.
I hear you on that. Well, I am looking forward. You know, I'm calling here from Atlanta, and tonight Reverend Al Sharpton. You got to excuse me. It's been a long day.
Okay.
I've been talking, I think, since like 5:30 this morning, so I'm kind of hoarse. I got to get me some hibiscus or some flora de jamaica tea.
Oh, okay,
So he's in town for a rally. In regards to the Voting Rights Act that is, I guess, is set to expire soon, and I'm kind of like a little confused about that because I remember back in the days when I was at school, back in Stony Brook, I remember it was an expiration occurring at that time period. So I guess these acts aren't really things that are permanent within our society. They're just temporary. They're not actually, you know, permanent laws.
That is, I'm very curious. I never heard of the voting rights having to be recertified or just, I mean, gosh, I thought if we were citizens, that was our right. I mean, did I miss something?
Oh,
we are citizens, correct?
Well, that is to be discussed further. So, you know, I guess, you know, with what we'll be discussing tonight with Mr. Coakley, we could pretty much go into further in regards to maybe, you know, these issues dealing with the nationality and citizenship, and maybe this would explain why a lot of things haven't really been brought to the forefront and pulled in full circle in a manner of what they should be, which is for the benefit, you know, of our people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just thought that was interesting. You know, I didn't get a chance to really to get down there because, you know, it's a lot of things going on my end, but I definitely will have to pull some reports to see what the end result of this rally and what occurred.
Well, one thing that motivated me to ask Mr. Coakley to be a guest, I know for a fact I am politically illiterate. I am not knowledgeable of civics, and I don't even know where to begin. I was always under the impression that we automatically get that right to vote. They fought for it. I didn't know they had to go and rally for it again. So I'm confused at this point. I thought since we are American citizens, that is our right. So maybe I missed the boat somewhere.
Possibly.
But that's good information. Good information. Are there anything going on, any events going on in Atlanta that we should know about? Or,
well, actually, you know what? I have this flyer for a movie that's showing this weekend, actually on the 25th, tomorrow, 25th, and the 26th, and they're having it at the Soul Vegetarian True Cinema Banquet Ballroom.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, now that you mentioned that, it was in my hand because I handed it to the brother. Give me one moment. I'll have it in a sec.
Okay.
But essentially, it's about the true history, you know, of our people with a focus on our history in Israel, Northeast Africa, and it will just be exposing the Khazarians and who they are and how they're claiming to be the original Jews.
Oh, that's going to be very interesting.
The movie was produced by the Hebrew Israelites. So they have their own, you know, in-house communication teams that does their filming and editing and distribution. The brother that was in the restaurant last night had mentioned that he saw it himself personally about 10 times. So I'm pretty sure that this is a definite must-see. But I will give you all those details in a minute. And then, you know, Brother Polite will be in town on
Saturday. I got to get to Atlanta. I got to get here.
Yeah,
now I'm excited.
So, you know, those two things are going on. And, of course, I'm pretty sure there's much more, but those are the highlights for the weekend.
Oh, man. Well, I would really like to see that movie. I'm always in search of who we really are or, you know, just get the background. Because I've always wondered, you know, who are we? You know, who are we? Because some things just don't add up. Maybe it's just me. I question everything, so.
I don't believe that it's just you, because I think that for a lot of people, and especially what I found in going in circles, attending lectures, even going to certain conferences, and even just, you know, perusing in the libraries, that people who, it's almost as if like you have this internal knowingness, and it's something that you really, it's like you feel it. And it's a feeling that really can't be thoroughly explained, but when certain information and data is brought forth, it's almost as if like you have a yes or no button inside that lets you know that something is not right and there's some missing pieces of the puzzle.
Oh, yes. And I'm always in search of information. Are there any good books you've read lately that's guiding you through that search? I know I have one that I've just purchased, the Ancient and Modern Brits, but I haven't really gotten into it yet. Is there any literature that you could refer me, you know, for further study?
Well, right now I've just been looking. This is actually a book that I've had for a while, but this is a book. It's the Nationality and Birthrights Taken from the Moors, the Black Codes of 1724.
Okay.
And this one is lesson book number 2, published by the Moor Order. The Moors Order of the Round Table. And Taj Tariq Bey is actually the author on this. And this piece really goes into depth, into detail about the Black Codes, with a focus on all of the articles, commentary, and some actual definitions broken down in a legal sense of what they mean. And what's so good about this lesson book is that it also has a quiz in the back of it. So this is perfect for someone that's older, if they want to read, and also, too, to give this to the children. Another book that I have at hand, actually, there's about 2 more books. The Tavistock Institute of Human Relations, Shaping the Moral, Spiritual, Cultural, Political, and Economic Decline of the United States of America. And this is by Dr. John Coleman. And this book pretty much ties into another book that a friend of mine just gave me last week called Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill.
Okay.
Yeah, so in essence, with that Outwitting the Devil, it actually goes into the whole shaping of this quote-unquote matrix and how on all angles, even dealing with our entertainment, our food, just the social paradigm, how things are structured and how things are instituted. So what's so tripped out about that Outwitting the Devil, though, is that, you know, as you know, Napoleon Hill, he wrote the book The Master Key to Riches, and then Think and Grow Rich. And back during that time, he wrote Outwitting the Devil, but he was told that he shouldn't publish it because it was so controversial. So throughout the book, it's almost like it's paradoxical in that he's having a conversation with the quote-unquote devil, and the devil is telling him about his plan to institute and to put this matrix in place so that he can control every corner of society. But what's so interesting about this is that as you go on into the book, I started thinking, like, wait a minute, was he actually involved and was there with the people when they were telling him this? Because it doesn't seem like it's even though it's written from like a third person, it's as if he's bearing witness and giving a testimony on the whole process of how things were happening.
Oh, man,
yeah.
That's insightful.
Yeah. So those are just the just a couple of books, but girl, you know, just like you, you know, my shelf is running over.
Yes.
It's not enough time in the day. Let me tell you, if I had enough time, when I say like with everything, all bills paid, not worried about anything, I mean, I could just read and document, write, post some blogs, come up with some clever business ideas, because you know that's what I'm into. And, you know, I would just pretty much let it flow, but there's so much stuff to catch up on.
Oh, yes. It's like you just don't have enough time in the day, especially when you really want to just dive in, because I'm always looking for answers. I'm always searching everywhere. I'm looking, you know, it doesn't matter what discipline, I'm just looking for answers, you know, wherever I could find them. So let's talk about health. What are you doing are you juicing now? Or, I mean, what are you doing for your diet? Because I'm thinking about becoming a vegan.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Well, you know, mainly I'm not doing anything special in particular. I've been on a journey with my diet. When I was, when was that, 9th or 10th grade? Dag, that seemed like a long time. No, I think that was like going into the 11th grade, I stopped eating pork. And then from there, it seemed like 2 years after that, when I was at school, I remember me and a couple of brothers and sisters, we went out to the market, and one of my homies was like, why are you buying this beast? And he was like, you see all of that red dye in there? So when I started looking at it from that perspective, that kind of canceled that out. And, you know, I stopped eating all of the red meat, and then from there it was chicken, and then I pretty much got rid of the fish. But one thing I'm going to tell you, and this was like over a span of like 6 or 7 years, then it got to the point where, you know, I did go back, and I would have chicken like maybe once or twice a month, and then it just tapered down to like maybe once a month, and then from there it was just like, okay, boom, I didn't do any dead animal flesh at all. Mm-hmm. But girl, I got to be straight up with you. Because, you know, coming up with a grandmother, I used to cook a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just something about the gravy. Gravy, sometimes it just don't taste right without that chicken juice. And I know that vegans and vegetarians are probably crunching in their seat right now, but it's the truth. So I'm going to tell anybody right now, you know, anybody who knows me, they know that I really am not the one that will just have me a big slab of ribs or whatever have you on my plate. But, you know, I do have me some curry gravy sometimes on my rice.
Okay,
and I'm not ashamed of it.
Well, sister, it looks like we have a caller on the line, area code 404-454-4604.
Yeah. Hello.
Greetings.
Yeah.
Greetings. Greetings. Welcome to Sister Awareness.
Oh, how y'all doing?
We're doing okay. How are you?
Oh, I'm all right. I was just listening to y'all talk.
Okay. Okay.
Tasha.
Okay.
Yeah. What time is Steve Coakley coming on?
We're expecting him shortly. Yes. We're expecting him to call in shortly.
Oh, okay, yeah. I was just listening to the sisters. I didn't know that it came up that I wanted to talk.
Oh, yes. Well, if you'd like to just hold and respond when Mr. Coakley comes on, that would be fine. That would be, or you can just stay on the line, whatever you'd like to do.
Okay, I'll just stay on the line.
Okay, thank you. And if you want to respond, just get in queue. Press
okay,
one.
Thank you.
But, yes, I am really thinking about becoming a vegan at this point. Do you think I should give Mr. Coakley a call?
Yeah, we could try that.
Okay, hold on. Hello?
Yes, I'm back. Okay. I'm here, Elena.
Okay. Well, I'll try them again and see. I'll try again.
You know, I do have the information here that you were asking about that movie.
Okay.
It's The Ascension of the New Adam.
Okay.
And it says here that this is the most significant change of direction since the fall of Adam. And they have coined this to be the sole vegetarian truth cinema. And the address is 879 Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard, Southwest. And for more information, they can call 404-916-5587. And again, this movie is a documentary that outlines our ancient history with a focus on Northeast Africa and exposing people that have strategically stolen the birthrights.
Okay.
And claiming to be the true Jews. So this should be a very interesting, you know, documentary to check out.
Okay. Well, I would definitely want to take a look at that as soon as I get to Atlanta, man. I wish I lived in Atlanta.
Oh, you do in spirit.
Yes.
So based on, you know, what's going on right now, because I know you said that you're in law school, and so what's going on, like, in your neck of the woods as far as, like, on the legal and political sense?
Right now, what's really bothering me is the mass incarceration, the war on drugs. And it seems like nobody's really doing anything or saying anything about it when it's mostly brothers that are being just hauled to jail in droves for nonviolent crimes. And it's like, you know, people just like, oh, that's what they deserve, you know. You know, it's just the nonchalant attitude about it really bothers me. Juveniles, that, you know, they're getting younger and younger, you know, being sentenced, you know, to prisons with adults. And, you know, it's like this retributive model, it really bothers me because I really believe some people participate in crime because they have no other choice, because they're actually socialized into it because of the environment that they live in. So if we could just change some of the communities and strengthen the communities, I think that approach would really prevent a lot of violent crimes.
Okay, I hear you on that.
So those are some of the things that I would like to address, you know, and I would like to see it on the political platform. What concerns me is our leadership don't speak on these things. I mean, it seems like the platform is just benign neglect, you know, with our leaders. I don't see anybody trying to bring any type of economic justice to us at this point. So that's a major concern of mine at this time.
So you feel that the people just need to get a little bit more politically aware and astute so that they
yes.
know that
yes.
they need to move forward to make some changes.
Yes.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yes, I think we, as a group, here, I think that pretty much we need to become politically literate, identify our leaders in our local and state and federal government that can make those changes that we need, and we just sit idly by and we don't say anything. You know, our vote really didn't count because, you know, we don't demand anything in return for our vote.
Okay. And speaking of that, of being politically literate, this doesn't just start with the Capitol or City Hall. It actually affects people, too, with dealing with their children within these institutions and these schools. And on that note, I would like for you to share with everyone what occurred with you and the experience where your child was taken to a field trip to the prison
mm-hmm.
without the parents
mm-hmm.
knowing.
Mm-hmm.
Can you please
mm-hmm.
just tell us a bit about that? Because, and the reason why I highlight that is that with parents being so busy and, you know, on that hamster wheel and having to work and do so much, what happens is that the children are left to these schools where things just happen. It's almost as if like
oh,
the
yeah.
school is acting like, you know, like they're the warden, quote
mm-hmm,
unquote,
mm-hmm,
and they're in charge of the child and that they can do anything that they would like. So in certain cases, a lot of things just pretty much will happen, like what you're saying with, you know, just taking these children to the prison,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and then
mm-hmm.
people are not aware of it, and some people may not even say or do anything, but
mm-hmm.
not realizing that even that is like a socialization mechanism where they're
mm-hmm.
trying to put these implants into the children's minds to say,
mm-hmm.
okay,
mm-hmm.
I understand that they might think that it's like a scared straight tactic, but
yes.
in essence, it's subliminally put in that image in their mind like, okay, you can be here or you're going here.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
Can you please just tell us a little bit about what happened?
Okay, well, first of all, I hold myself accountable for allowing that to happen. I hold myself accountable because I put all of my trust into the school. And I always had the philosophy, well, that is your second parent. You are to respect that teacher. And I, you know, I had my barriers, you know, with school, you know. I never thought this would happen. This particular
now,
incident.
We go, I'm sorry,
mm-hmm,
Elena.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
just to give people a little bit more clarity, can you please tell us about the school district? Like, what is the school district? What's the name of it?
Or
the county?
I don't want to actually disclose the county because that could be you know, I still have a family member. My nephew, he attends that particular school, but I won't disclose his name. If I didn't have any children in that school system, I would disclose the county. But I can tell you this incident did happen in Georgia, and it is documented with the department, with the Office of Justice, Civil Rights in Washington. It's documented.
Okay. Sorry about that.
That's okay. In 2006, first of all, I have special needs children. I have two special needs children, and they were diagnosed with intellectual delay and emotional behavior problems. And they were in special needs classes, and they had field trips in which they went to, you know, integrate them into the community. They take them to different places almost every week or maybe every 2 weeks. So they had pre-planned field trips. And this one particular field trip, they went to a prison, a local prison here in Georgia. And without parents' permission, there was a scared straight simulated exercise done on the African-American males. There were no white males put in the handcuffs. There were no white males put in jail cells.
Okay.
And that is when, you know, I really started, I had to really, first of all, examine why I put my child in that position. Why didn't I question, you know, those activities? You know, why I even signed the paper to allow him to go. So I had to really do some soul searching. And you know, it wasn't until I saw my son come home with tears in his eyes that I realized, you know, racism truly still exists in the 21st century. When I saw my son and looked in his eyes and just knowing the ink on the paper subjected him to what he went through, I mean, I have been on a search of what I can do to prevent this from happening to anybody else's child. And I take full responsibility for what happened. I just can't blame someone else because I should have been more astute into researching and finding out why the children were going to different places. I didn't even question it. I just put my John Henry there, and bam, he was taken to a prison, and he didn't have a juvenile record. He had never been in any type of, you know, juvenile system or anything, probation, anything like that. So, I mean, I really had to do some soul searching and really had to change my mindset about racism. And
so,
it still exists.
So after that, what was your next step? What was your course of action? How did you handle
my course? My course of action, my next step was I went to the school.
Mm-hmm.
And I verified whether or not it happened, and it did happen, what he told me, and it happened. There were other students that witnessed it. It was there was other teachers who witnessed it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I even went as far as to go through the Georgia Department of Corrections to get, you know, via the Freedom of Information Act, and I got copies of the memos and everything, and I pieced together what happened. And after that, I contacted the NAACP in Baltimore. I contacted the NAACP in my area. Nothing happened. So at that juncture, I went online to the, I think it's the Justice Department, to the Office of Civil Rights, and I downloaded a 300-page manual of investigative manual that they had online at that time, and a 9-page PDF it was a complaint form, and I filled it out, got some things notarized from the witnesses and everything, and sent in the documents that I had and went from there. So I basically handled it on my own. I couldn't get a lawyer to touch it with a 10-foot pole in my area. But
so
I fought best I could at that time, and I hadn't been to, you know, school or anything. So I was just out there by myself. Poor little old me.
Smart little you. But so just for clarity, just in case if there's anybody out there that would have children in the school system, if they're having some issues that are similar to this, you were saying that so the first step was to go to the Department of Corrections and pull data via the Freedom of Information Act?
Yes. There, you can't do that. There's certain things, certain documents you can retrieve that are made available to the public, memos and different things of that sort. You just can't get personal information.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just the Department of Corrections overall
pulled that data.
Okay. And then next you mentioned that you went online and you pulled the data from the Justice Department's website?
Yes, Office of Civil Rights. They have a 9-page complaint form that you can download and fill it out and mail it back with supporting documents.
So after you mailed this complaint in, what happened?
Well, they made contact with the school, and they investigated it. And the school said they would never subject the children to that type of exercise again. But I really believe it was some type of behavior modification program that they were trying to implement. You know, when our children are in public school, you have people that don't really have our children's best interests at hand, social engineers, and I think they have too much access to our children. And I think it was some type of program probably being implemented without our knowledge. So at that juncture, at that point, that's when I really started investigating, looking at things differently.
Hmm. And then from there, did the Justice Department actually come on site?
Yes.
To the school?
The Office of Civil Rights, I think it was someone from Atlanta. Yes, they came, and they investigated as well.
Mm-hmm. So from there, what was the end result?
Do
they find the schools, or what happens?
I don't really know. I don't really remember what happened, but it is documented. It is documented. What happened is documented. Along with several others, because, you know, I used the Freedom of Information Act again to see what this school had done in the past, and there have been some complaints filed in the past on this particular school.
Mm. That is something else.
Mm-hmm. So we parents have to really become active, proactive and active, when our children, you know, are in school, and not just send them there. We need to be involved. And that was my wake-up call. So.
Right.
Well, I'm going to try to get Mr. Coakley again.
Okay, then.
Okay, hold on.
Mm-hmm.
Cannot accept new message.
Hello?
Yes, 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 I am here.
Okay. I'll try again. Maybe we'll get him before the show is over.
Yeah, we do have some time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, are there any current events you're aware of?
Oh, you know, only what I had mentioned about what's going on at the with the movie,
mm-hmm.
the Ascension of the New Adam, and
yeah.
then the lecture with Brother Polite.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I tell you, I'm really, really, really concerned about education at this point. Do you think we should segregate our children now, build black schools? Do you think that would be feasible at this juncture? Hello? Hello?
Mine here?
Yes, yes, I thought I lost it.
Right,
yes,
it's probably
yes.
The headset here.
Oh, yes.
But you know, there are several, I'm sorry, go ahead.
In terms of education, do you think that we should resegregate again? Or what is your thoughts on that?
Well, currently, I know here in Atlanta there are about 25 different schools that cater to our children. They are private schools. They do not have full capacity. And I think it is of a good benefit when you have, because it's not enough to just talk about segregation. I think there has to be a conscious element in place where you have teachers that are cognizant. And when I talk about being conscious and cognizant, it's not about just taking the exact curriculum as it is and just getting a whole bunch of people together that look alike. It's about having a curriculum in place that's really going to slice the psychological slavery. And address things on that level, whether we're dealing with on the spiritual component, dealing with our health, dealing with the politics, the whole nine, the history. It has to go deep. So it's not enough just to have the school system with a whole bunch of kids that look together and you're still using the same curriculum that's instituted through the public schools.
Yes.
Right, because, like, for example, let me tell you, this is something so funny.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my. When my grandma was down, we had went over to the Dr. Martin Luther King's, the Memorial Center. And this brother that was in there, he was a security guard. And we got to talking. He was so cool. Real down-home, down-to-earth brother. And he said that a teacher came in there. She was about 25 years old. She brought her, fifth graders in on a field trip. And she told the children that Dr. King was a Heisman Trophy winner and he was into football, and that was her main emphasis, what she was talking about. And I was like, wait a minute, into football? See, I don't know. Like I said, maybe that was a side of him that, I'm not aware of. I don't know. But that was her main emphasis in what she was discussing about him. And, of course, I know that it's a lot of investigative research and documentation, saying that he was involved with, the CIA or FBI and he was an undercover agent. You have people with these reports that are documenting this and saying this. But whatever which way it is, it was interesting that she was not actually highlighting and talking about what was going on from a historical context during that time period. And that's the type of consciousness that I'm talking about, that the teachers will actually have that in place before they're going to go ahead and then, group and get all these the children together and segregate them.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
But, one thing that I would have to say is that if that element is there, it's highly beneficial because people should know, because right now you would not have, and it's just so interesting that if you had a group of Khazarians, they would not openly just say, okay, send our children to the Nazi schools. They would never do that.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, when it comes to us, we are just so open and readily available to just send our children away like it's no thing to a group of strangers who really don't have their best interest at heart in certain cases. And I'm not saying this for all schools, but I can speak for myself personally in the school district that I was brought up in. Girl, it was a mess.
Mm-hmm.
It was a hot mess. And the reason why I say that is I noticed at a very young age the way that we were treated as opposed to how the European children were treated. And the reason why I say that, it would be like subliminal things. And these subliminal things that I'm speaking of is the same subliminal things that people deal with when they're on jobs, if they're
mm-hmm.
involved in certain organizations.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Sister, can I answer this call?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I'm going on and on, girl.
Yes, sister,
okay.
But hey, I am enjoying this. Hold on, sister.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Sister?
Yes.
That was Mr. Coakley. He will be calling in shortly.
Oh,
I am
great.
So excited.
I am too. I am as well. Yes.
But you were saying, you were saying.
Oh, yeah, what I was just saying is that it would be subliminal,
mm-hmm.
little punches, I would say, or subliminal bullying. You know, it's so interesting how they want to talk about bullying and bullying so much, because there's some psychological bullying that goes on when you have certain adults, and in this case it was European adults that were psychologically bullying the children. It would be little things like in between classes. You would have a math teacher that would be clearly 35, 45 years old that would go on to the brothers, oh, what's going on, man? How y'all be doing? What's going on? What it is? And trying to make a mockery of, you know, our tone and our dialect and how we would converse with each other. And then I could recall being in a class and me and, you know, back when you're in the 7th and 8th grade and things of that nature, where you would have, you know, the kids just talking amongst each other, and the teacher would come up and say, like, oh, you all have to get rid of these colloquialisms and all of this other, just like saying little stuff all the time, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, just from that angle, I was just bringing that up to say is that those are just a couple of incidences. But one thing, you know, I've always been very vocal, and I guess, you know, what did our parents say, being hard-headed?
Oh,
and being
yeah.
insubordinate. But sometimes, you know, as a child, you still have that knowingness that we were talking about. Children have that. And in some cases, you know, when people speak up about that, especially the child, and then that's when it's like, oh, they're misbehaving and they have these behavior disorders and this. But sometimes the children are really just seeing a spade for a spade and calling it out.
Exactly, exactly, sister, exactly.
So these are some things that, you know, that would have to be addressed, because if the parents aren't really cognizant and conscious, and if the children are there and they're pretty much like fending on their own, then that's when you have that perpetual cycle where after the children leave, they go to college, or if they just jump into the workforce, you would have the same people that really aren't really thinking or being alert and astute to be able to influence any change on a political level or on the legal levels when they're out in the quote-unquote real world.
Exactly.
So this definitely has to be addressed, you know, down at the lower level with the youth.
Exactly. I am going to try Brother Steve again. Hold on.
Mm-hmm.
Just cut me off again. I'm really getting. There's a lot.
You're on the line. You're on the line.
All righty.
Thank you so much for coming. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Greetings. 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 This is Brother Steve Coakley.
Greetings, Brother Coakley. Brother Steve, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay.
That is great. We are so glad to have you.
Alrighty. Glad to be here finally.
Yes, yes. I am so sorry. This is my first show, Brother Coakley, and I have had so many technical difficulties and so many problems, but I finally got it together. Finally.
Alrighty.
Okay. So, where did you attend school, Brother Coakley? Would you like to just brief me on your background or anything you want to say? Just you got the airwaves. Hello? Hello?
Yes, I am here. I believe we may have lost him.
You think so?
Mm-hmm.
Hold on. Let me try him again.
You may want to have them call in on the dialing number.
Okay. Okay, hold on.
Yeah, so that it could be a little clearer.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hopefully he will call back in.
Yes,
sister,
that would
there?
Be good.
That
oh,
would
yes,
be good
I am
to call
here.
Back in. Okay. But
yes,
yeah,
yes.
My experience in school, I live in a rural area. I grew up, you know, I experienced racism at, you know, when I was in school, and it was not a happy time for me, and it really discouraged me from wanting to go and actually having a good time learning. So I can imagine, you know, what our children go through. However, you do have some black teachers as well that can be just as big as racist as any other, teacher that can be. So there's a lot that's going on with our children now.
Yeah.
There's a lot that's going on.
So what's key, one thing that a friend of mine does, even though she works hard, at least one day out of the week, she spends the day within the school volunteering, sitting in on classes, so that she can actually just, you know, keep that relationship going and establish that rapport so that she actually knows what's going on with her daughter until she's at the point where she can pull her out of school and then move forward with doing some homeschooling.
Mm-hmm.
So that is one thing to consider in doing, and then getting involved with the Parent Teachers Association.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm going to try Brother Coakley again. Hold on.
Mm-hmm.
Full. Maybe he'll call back in the show. But
okay.
But yes, there's a lot going on in our communities now, and there's a lot that we can be doing. A lot that's going on that we really need to address in our communities, especially that does not benefit our children. And, you know, you can only just collaborate with like-minded people and try to make things better. Economics are a big part of our problems and issues as well. And I've been looking into different nonprofits and trying to pretty much collaborate with other people who really want to make changes, but I'm thinking it's going to have to be on a grassroots level and just try to do things on our own for a change. That's where my research is, you know, leading me. What do you think about that?
Oh, I mean, I'm in agreement with you about the economics. Because one of the main things when it deals with economics, if you really think about it, you really don't need a lot of money to live.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What it is that when we get ourselves in certain situations, it calls for a lot of money. But, you know, now, for example, like with this real estate bust, one could get a house and pay it off within a year. They could start, you know, gardening, as some people will do. They could start utilizing, you know, solar power. It's really not that expensive to supplement, you know, or even, I mean, on that note, I mean, if the house is built right with the appropriate windows in a certain place, sometimes you won't even need to utilize that much electricity. So there's certain strategies that could be put in place and certain mindsets that can shift so that so much time isn't needed to be spent on working which was taking it away from the children and spending that time with the family and building the structure.
Of course.
When it's dealt with economics, it all goes back to the psychological and spiritual component that affects the economics.
What industries do you see coming to Georgia? Where do you see the jobs opening up for a lot of people? I know there's one plant in my area that is opening up soon, Caterpillar, and that's going to bring some jobs to Georgia. And maybe it would help the situation, ease the situation a little bit better.
Well, as far as industry, of course, you know, this is turning into like a movie hub for the entertainment industry. Mm-hmm. And when you think about that, it's not really just focusing on like the art of making the movie. I have a colleague of mine who's in the IT field, and his business has like strictly shot up about 30% to 40% of just in a lot of companies that are relocating here because of the tax incentive that the city of Atlanta is providing for them to select Atlanta as a location, you know, to film a lot of their projects. So in that essence, I mean, just him alone, just getting that extra business coming in, he has had to bring in some part-time people to assist him out with setting up their networks, setting up their websites and things of that nature, helping with their security. So, I mean, I see that. And, you know, now that you mention that, I'm due to take a look at the Atlanta Business Chronicle and the Atlanta Tribune. Okay. And that's something I do like to take a look at here and there, because I recently saw in the front cover of the Atlanta Business Journal that there was $100 million that the eldest son, I forgot his first name, but Dr. King's eldest son, he's doing some raising where he's trying to gain, you know. Okay. I'm not saying this right. I'm kind of tongue-tied right now. But, you know, he's trying to raise about $100 million so that they can restore the King Center, which I thought that was interesting, because if $100 million is utilized for that, of course that would be a big increase for, you think, people that are into the construction, things of that nature. People who are into visual arts, they usually have a large portion of that money that would go to people who do exhibit design and things of that nature. So that's one thing, but all in all, I still have to go back to the premise in that if people utilize the monies that they do have wisely, that they can really get themselves out of the perpetual economic slavery that's in place.
Exactly. Do a little trimming.
Yes.
I started really reducing my budget when I grew a garden last year. And that wiped out about maybe at least $100 per week on my grocery bill. And just having a garden saved me so much money. And I knew that my vegetables were, you know, they were good vegetables because I grew them. I was excited about that nice little budget cut that I got. Just starting little things like that can do a lot as well.
Oh, it sure can. You're right about that.
So, but community, you know, the community, you know, the black community, is a lot that we can do. It's just about, you know, connecting with people, like-minded people like me and you. And I want to thank you for just, you know, introducing me to the conscious community in that area in Atlanta. So I'm just ecstatic. I'm always learning something new, whether it's the Hebrew Israelites, the Moors, it doesn't matter. You know, they look like me, I'm listening. I'm taking from everybody, drawing from everybody.
I hear you on that.
Yeah.
Definitely hear you on that.
So if there's any lectures or anything in the area, please let me know, because I don't want to just be confined to one group. I am open for suggestions from anybody to change my position in life, whether it's about, you know, health, you know, whether it's health and wellness, economics, education, I'm open. I'm taking, you know, any suggestions, you know.
All right, I sure will keep that in mind.
Oh, yes, and I'm always willing to connect with like-minded people. So are there any projects that you are working on at this time?
Yes, actually, there's a couple of projects that I have going on, but I'd rather not mention them.
Yeah.
You know how I work. I like
really
talk about things after they're done to make an
announcement. Yeah.
But I have a writing project and then a couple of web design projects that I'm working on at the moment.
Okay. Well, I have some ideas, but I haven't conceptualized them yet to just figure out whether or not they would be feasible. But I have some ideas as well. My I'm getting a love for gardening. So I may do some co-op gardening this year with some other people, you know. Because I am in a rural area, as you can see. So that's what I think that's going to be my new hobby. Gardening.
Yeah, it's a common.
I have a love for
it's
it.
Mm-hmm. It's very
and also,
soothing.
I'm interested in food preservation. I'm like I said, I want to go vegan, but I also want to learn how to prepare those foods and preserve those foods. So I'm going to invest in a hydrator this year, and I'm just willing and open to try anything.
Mm-hmm.
A complete lifestyle change.
What's interesting with going vegan is that there are certain foods that you can make and you would swear that they were just regular foods. Like, for example, you can actually make a raw lasagna, and I know it may sound so crazy, but in essence, you get, you know, those little potato pillars?
Mm-hmm.
You actually would get that. And then you could take some zucchini and some squash and just thinly slice it into a whole bunch of layers. Mm. And then from there, in a blender, take some, like, sun-dried tomatoes, some oregano, some sea salt. And you could put a little bit of agave nectar or honey in it if you want to.
Okay.
With some, a little bit, tad bit of onion, fresh, of course, and some fresh garlic. And you blend that up, let that sit, make your sauce. And then just layer it accordingly. And what you can do is that you could take some nutritional yeast, if you like, to sprinkle on top, and that would give it almost like a Parmesan-type-like flavor.
Okay.
But like I said, use that a little bit because it's really not good to have, even though they say it's nutritional, you really don't want to have yeast, a lot of yeast in your body.
Oh, yeah.
But from there, you know, you would just, you know, like how you would traditionally make a lasagna. You layer it and put it in a dish, and then you could put it in your oven at, like, maybe 75 to 80 degrees just for about 4 or 5 minutes, or you could put it in your dehydrator for about 5 minutes. So it'll warm it a little bit, but it'll still be raw. But as the juices layer over all of the vegetables, it has this consistency that will be similar to pasta.
Hmm.
And it tastes so good. You won't even realize that, okay, this is not really the real deal. So it's so many ways. And then another thing, too, that is so hearty, and this would be excellent for children, to make a vegan pudding.
Mm.
And what you do is that you take, a vegan chocolate pudding. You take avocado, ripe avocados, and then get some pure cocoa. And when I say cocoa, or as they would say cocoa, get some pure, and you can get that from a health food store. And so with that, it's a pure chocolate that has no additives or preservatives or anything. And you get that, and you pretty much grind it. You can grind it with a grinder, or you can just pretty much crush it real good and fine and blend that in with the avocado, and then put a little strawberry on top. Girl, you would just think it was some not good for your chocolate pudding.
Mm.
You know, the chocolate is high in antioxidants. So that's it's just very tasty and hearty. So, I mean, there's a lot of fun things that you can experiment. And what I find is that when you are looking for the alternative, because, girl, I didn't tell you about the spinach and dumplings that I experimented one day. Because, you know, I'm a lover of chicken and dumplings, but I know, you know, that hen juice, I need to kind of stay away from that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm just bringing this up to say that when you, it's almost as if, like, when your spirit, in your mind, you're saying, like, okay, I want to change, I want to do something.
Yes.
All the alternatives and the things that can fulfill or replace what you're looking to get rid of, the ideas will start coming. Girl, the herbs and the food will literally start talking to you. The people will appear. Books will appear. You know, it's just like everything comes to fulfill its purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very interesting. But,
yeah.
Oh, and lady, I must say, I know we're getting a little bit off topic from the political literacy.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The,
yes, but you
political
know what?
Literacy and community
health.
Awareness. But I guess the health is a one of
the health industry is a political is a political thing. Look at all the money that goes into it, and look at all of the money that can be saved if people eat more healthy foods. So
okay.
Okay. I don't think we're off topic. I mean, there's some politics behind. We'll get into that. We can get into that, too. There's politics behind the health industry. But I don't know what it is. You know, I just know I need to change my diet. I had the bypass surgery in 2001, and I had lost a lot of weight. I used to be like 310 pounds. And I find myself gaining this weight back. So I'm like, I know that I need to change my diet. I know this for a fact because over the past year, I would say I've gained about 20 pounds. And that's a lot for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I know I need to get rid of the meat. I need to get rid of the meat. I need to get rid of the starches. And I need to get rid of the sugars because it would be a shame to go through that major surgery to only gain this weight back. And I ain't
right.
Had it. So I know
one
I need a lifestyle change.
Yeah, one thing that could be helpful is to, do you eat a lot of salads?
No.
Or do you have a lot of greens, even if it's like steamed
yeah.
vegetables?
Yes, I cook greens. I do spinach. I do sauteed zucchini squash, cabbages,
mm-hmm.
greens, stuff like that, the traditional vegetables. But
right.
I really need to get a cookbook and start experimenting that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that may help.
Yeah, another thing, too, I don't know what it is. I have to do the research on it. But cinnamon curbs the appetite. And I guess it's going back to that old adage of when your cells get the nutrients that it needs, it kind of reduces your hunger. And I have to say that in honor of Minister Farrakhan, I recall him saying that at a lecture back in, I think that was like 91, 92.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something about the cinnamon. Like in the morning, if you get like some cinnamon sticks
mm-hmm.
and just chew on a couple, or even if you did like a cinnamon tea, I don't know what it is, but it does, it dramatically decreases your appetite and cravings.
That sounds interesting. And I'm open to try anything. But as you say, we kind of got away from the politics, the political. What do you think about the upcoming elections? Do you think we should really be focused on that right now? Or is it something that we should be concerned with? Or there's other things that we should be concerned about right now?
Well, Elena, I may be the wrong person to ask about that because
mm-hmm.
I do understand that we do not elect the president.
Okay.
Yes, I do, and it's interesting because what I'm speaking of is with the Electoral College, and the Electoral College is pretty much explained to us
mm-hmm.
when we were, in the fifth grade, I believe, fifth or sixth
yeah.
grade.
Mm-hmm.
So... in a sense, when we're talking about this election, and if you know that the Electoral College is in place, then are we really electing these people that are the candidates? The people aren't really selecting the president.
Mm-hmm. Good question.
So, I mean, for me to actually to speak on that and to give my opinion, it really wouldn't be really real or legitimate because I know that we're not actually selecting the president.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
One thing that I will say is that we should really focus on organizing amongst ourselves,
mm-hmm.
and creating our own economies, our own self-sustaining economies, and just really taking care of our own affairs.
Exactly.
That's one thing that I think that we should focus on. And the reason why I say that is because in certain other cultural communities, they could care less about who's in office or who's doing what because they're so organized and focused amongst themselves that they make do to move forward economically, health-wise, socially, spiritually. They're pretty much a nation within a nation.
Exactly. And I think we need to
yes.
focus on that as well. I agree. I really agree. I think the way we see ourselves need to change. I think we see ourselves more as individuals and that we just think in terms of me when we should be thinking in terms of we. And I really think that's the only way we are going to change our economic position, you know. We have the funds, we have access to the funds, but we just take them elsewhere. We don't pull them together enough amongst ourselves. I don't know whether that's a skill we don't know how or we've been socialized into that, but I think it's something that we need to get back to.
Yes, I hear you on that.
Yeah.
That's interesting what you said, not knowing how to.
Yeah.
Or not actually seeing it in action.
Yeah, yeah. Because I don't know of a whole lot of people that actually do, you know, do business together. I mean, actually come together and start a business, co-opt a business. You know, I haven't heard of, you know, many people doing that. And that's something that I'd like to investigate and become a part of. So.
And that's interesting what you said about coming together. A friend of mine was just telling me that her and her group, they started a birthday club.
Mm-hmm.
And that everybody, I believe it's about 15 people in it at this moment. So everybody puts in $20, and then on the person's birthday, they get the birthday pot, you know, so they just keep the money circulating. So every time somebody's birthday comes, they know they're going to get a lump sum, and they just circulate the money amongst each other. And that's kind of similar to a friend of mine that's from Jamaica. They do that as well, but they do chip in more money. And with them, it's not focused on birthdays. They just pretty much, I guess, pick it like every quarter that the funds circulate to a different person. So, but with theirs, they pretty much get a lump sum of anywhere from like $3,000 to $4,000, and each person gets a chance to do that. So, I mean, that's something that's practical because I know it's all about, you know, something that's easy and practical. But with that, you know, you would definitely have the people who are on the same page and that have trust amongst each other.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I could see that model being used to purchase land.
Oh, yes, 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 yes.
I could see that model being purchased land that's, you know, pretty reasonable going in with, or real estate.
Yes, and on that note, you know, I have to mention, girl, in Atlanta right now, the real estate prices are so cheap. I've seen some lots, half an acre, quarter of an acre, anywhere from $2,500, $3,000, $4,000. Acre, $6,000 or $7,000. So you have to think, with the acre of land being roughly, what is it, like about 42,280 square feet, if I'm not mistaken?
Mm-hmm.
And an average house lot within a city is roughly about 5,000 square feet. And so when we're talking about that, you're saying that that's with a house that's about 800 to 1,000 square feet, and then having a decent-sized backyard. So even on a half an acre, we're talking about roughly about 23,000 square feet, if that's divvied up and it's about $2,000 or $3,000, then if you take four people to divide that and they each have a substantial amount over a 4,000 square foot area, you can have, you may not have to have, like, you wouldn't have like a full fledged house, but I'm a big fan of those little cottages.
Mm-hmm.
And if a brother know, you know, you get some brothers that know how to build right, you can have a couple of cottages on there and then have your backyard for the garden, and that's just like a little model community of what some people can start amongst themselves.
Mm-hmm. I can see that as well. I can see that as well. So what is the price range?
You think, oh, you said the price range for like the land?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In Atlanta.
Yeah, it range. Well, the price ranges, I've seen some lots as low as $2,000 going up to about $7,000 or $8,000. But then when you're talking about other areas where it may be like by a prime commercial area, the prices may go up to like $15,000-$20,000. But of course, it's going towards like more of an acre plus. Yeah. So well, I mean, it's and that's in the houses. You know, the houses. Some of the houses that are like fixer uppers, I've seen some for $5,000, $9,000.
Man.
And then, of course, for like $24,000, then that you would get something that's like in a better condition. But the reason why, you know, I bring this up is because when you start dealing with the politics and when you start talking about what people are going through, whether it's the police brutality, when you're dealing with people who have to rely on like certain social programs,
yes,
or if the money is not being distributed appropriately to schools and things of that nature, when you have a people that really decide to say, hey, I'm going to start to take this into my own hands, I'm going to reduce my expenses, I'm going to make sure I don't have to owe anybody a mortgage, I'm going to start growing my own food, I'm going to get off the grid. When people start moving more in that direction, it's like they start building each other up, building each other up, and they're really getting stronger amongst each other. So really, the political fight or what they're really trying to achieve, it shifts from straight up on money, and you start talking about other things like nationality.
Mm-hmm.
You start talking about things like birthrights. You know what I'm saying?
Do you have the? Do you think? I know. I believe that nationality should be one of the main topics on the table for us. This is just from my perspective, because as you were saying at the beginning of the show, I had no idea they had to go back to the drawing board and, you know, am I getting it right? Ask for permission again, or, you know, recertify permission to vote. If, I mean, I had no idea that was going on. I thought that was accomplished during civil rights. So it appears that we need to go back to the drawing board and question nationality, you know, because something's wrong. I thought that was a right that was given to us long ago. So I may be wrong, you know, because I'm not politically literate. So
I hear you on that.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, as I said, the first time that I heard about that, I was in school at the time, and so I was like, we're already talking about the Voting Rights Act is expiring. What is that? So, I mean, I hear you, you know, as well. I am learning as well, Elena. I am learning day by day.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have to say, I'm just so thankful for the scholars and the people that are out there that are studying and that actually bring forth the information. I'm very thankful for that.
Me too. Me too.
Yeah.
I reach out to them. I mean, I reach out to them all the time, and especially the elders, because they have that experience. They've been there. They've weathered the storm, and they have a lot to offer us. You know, I know a lot of them are suffering from health problems and whatever have you, and but the information that the wealth of information that I have acquired since I've become conscious in, you know, in my search, I could never get it in a college or a university or any classroom, because they bring it forth with, they've been through it. The experience, you know, is so overwhelming just to hear some of the scholars talk about their experiences and what they found and what we need to do. And out of most of them that I speak with, it brings me back to question the citizenship and nationality.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it interesting that when during the civil rights era, not to minimize the efforts of our elders, of those people who lost their lives or whatever, not to minimize their efforts, but I find it interesting. Nationality was not really focused on at that time. There were ambiguous goals, not practical goals. So I think the next movement should be to address nationality. We need to really look at that in the 21st century.
Yeah, that's definitely something to consider. One thing that I need to pull is that on the rights of indigenous people.
I'm going to be taking a look at that as well.
All right.
I find that document interesting and the timing of that document very interesting, you know. So, but nationality should be the new. It should be of concern of blacks on this continent. We really need to take a look at it and we need to address it, because I think it's the underlying premise of most of our problems. Because, hey, I thought once we got that right, I never knew we had to go recertify. There's something wrong with that picture.
Well, I mean, with that, it's really not focusing on recertification, it's the act expiring. You know, just like how if you have a credit card and it says it expires at a certain time, but it's up to that credit card company to decide if they want to reissue and renew the credit card or the...
Since when rights expire?
Well, it's more of... a right, and it's just so interesting. Because I just have to mention that earlier today, I remember mentioning that, and I was speaking with Sabir, and he was saying that, you know, an act is something that's temporary. It's not something that is like law, where it would be constant and just there and can never be changed.
I
guess, it's, you know, dealing with that legal ease. And speaking of legal ease, Elena, being in school, What has pierced your veil as far as, like, how you look at these words and the etymology and what things really mean? Because, and the reason why I ask that is because, like, let's take, for example, color.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm thinking of color, I'm just thinking, like, okay, something that has a hue. But looking in the Black's Law Dictionary, it's like, okay, this color really means a fiction.
Mm-hmm.
So when people say that people are black and things of that nature, it's like it's a colorable person.
From what I've...
So what has been some things that you have, like, unveiled and uncovered? And I should say, is there a big focus at your school on knowing these legal
no.
terms?
Oh, no. You're more geared towards the process. You're pretty much, I wouldn't be afraid to say indoctrinated. It's like indoctrination. The words are ambiguous. They can mean anything, but just based from, like, the word black, to me it's a social status, a legal social status of subjugation. To me, that's my opinion of it. But I haven't found anything that I have been studying that would really that will really remove us from the position. I see the procedure. It's good to know the procedure of law.
Mm-hmm.
It's good to be aware of the channels, the procedures that, you know, they go through to do what they need to do. You really need to be aware of that. But I really don't feel that I have a thorough background in law.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
In common
so
law.
Didn't,
in the Constitution,
so like,
yes.
So
and,
like,
and that's something I'm going to have to go back and study. That is something that, that's my deficiency.
So, like, with the professors, though, do they really focus and hone in on the Black's Law Dictionary?
Not really. Not really.
That's interesting.
It's left up.
That's interesting.
It's left up to you as the student to utilize that Black Law Dictionary.
Wow.
However, the terms are so ambiguous, you can shape it and mold it any way you want, which
mm-hmm.
has happened in our case over the years.
Mm-hmm.
The terms are ambiguous. So I find myself spending more time going back, searching and digging, trying to find the real meaning of a certain term. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because the terms evolve. What they meant in 1953, they don't mean the same thing today. It's totally different. But it's good
right,
to know those
terms
older
the,
terms.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. But
yeah,
do
I
just, think I have a... I don't think I have a thorough background that I should in civics either. So that's just something I'm going to have to do independently, you know.
Okay, I see what you're saying. But, yeah, I mean, I definitely hear you on that. So how was the climate of the local politics where you are. And I'm just saying that from the standpoint, are there a lot of people that are active, like at the council, city council meetings? Are there certain things or legislation that has been brought forth that people aren't in agreement with? And the reason why I ask is that I know here one of the major things that a lot of people within the city, they are totally against a bulk of money that has been issued to an independent third-party company to enforce parking in a lot of areas where the people have parked for years without having to pay anything. And so now it's this big rush to, I guess they promised that they would bring in millions and millions of dollars, and they have a quota they're going to fill per year to bring back to the city. So you have places, like I said, in certain business districts where the people have just been parking there for free, like I said, over 10, 15 years, and all of a sudden it's all these limitations and constructs that are in place to literally, you know, to wipe out their money. And it's so funny because when I think about it, I was like, you know, this really isn't right, and you may have one or two people that may speak up about it, but it's not like in a mass. So one thing that I know that I'm lacking in the areas of is to really identify the people that really are instituting a change. And I don't know if this is something where it's just a matter of writing the local city council person or making the demands, because if you really look at it, and like I said, it's so many different things that really affect the people. But let's just take, for example, something simple like parking. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, one, okay, who is the real owner of the land? Two, if you're not the true owner of the land, how could you enforce anything on the land? And then three, how can you usurp the people's money and then use that very same money to pay the people who taking their money?
You want the truth? That's a cold piece of work.
And I mean, it's really, and just things like that, when you really look at it. And, you know, I've had some discussions with some of these meter maids, and they're like, oh, well, this ain't against the law. I could do this. What are you talking about? And they're so deep into the matrix that they're just pretty much blindly just enforcing and doing whatever they're supposed to do. But when you really look at it from a, I just have to go back to my the laws of my art and dealing with reciprocity and balance. It's not just, you know what I'm saying?
There's a lot of things.
And that's something so that that is something you know that's so simple. That's just like one simple little thing. And I'm going to give you another example, too. I had a situation where I had to go down and speak with a, I had some questions about a couple of tax bills. And so I wanted to get some clarity. And so I'm down in the commissioner's office. And I'm asking some questions about, you know, the bills that I had. And he's like, I can't tell you this, or I can't assist you with this, and we're not the ones that would address your concern. So, you know, I looked at the man, and I said, I pointed to the address that the bill came from, and I said, is this the address that's right here on the bill? He said, yes. And I said, do you see this name? It says Tax Commissioner's Office. And I said, am I here in the Tax Commissioner's Office? He said, yes. And I said, so you're telling me that you sent me a bill, and your address to your office is on this bill, and the name of your office is here on the bill, but I'm here, and I want to get answers to my questions. You're telling me that you can't answer me? I said, this is some straight-up ghetto. Now, I shouldn't say ghetto, but gangsta, S-H-I-T.
yeah. Well, sister, and I really appreciate it. We have, like, 2 minutes left.
Oh,
and
okay. Talking.
Well, you know, I have enjoyed this show. It is my first show, and I've made some mistakes tonight. And I would like to welcome the audience to feel free to chime in anytime. We're going to be here Thursdays from 7:30 to 9:30. And I'm open for any type of dialogue. I love to talk about current events, culture, politics, civics, anything, because we need to engage in healthy dialogue. And thank you so much, sister, for coming on. Thank you
so
much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Good night.
Good night.